Hi, I'm Rochelle Jackson. Welcome to the Crime Couch. I'm an investigative journalist and true crime author, and I know who's who in the zoo, the crims, the cops, and the interesting individuals in between. So get comfy and join me each week on the Crime Couch for a rollicking, intriguing tale. It'll be one heck of a journey. Former Detective Senior Sergeant Wayne Wally Laver returns to the Crime Couch this week. He's just retired as the third longest serving police officer with 55 years under his belt. Wally worked many years in the Homicide Squad and in DTS, or Detective Training School, as an instructor. Today we're going to talk about the murder of a young woman in Melbourne's eastern suburbs that's very much stayed with him. Hi Wally, thanks very much for sitting on the Crime Couch with me today.
Hi Rochelle, thanks for having me.
When you investigate a murder, what are the most challenging aspects, Wally?
Well, initially is obviously getting as much evidence as you can, but to try and connect or to identify a suspect. And once you've identified that suspect, is connecting him with the offence and then have enough evidence to be able to arrest him and then in the end, hopefully process and charge.
Is it often quite a complex matter? I'd imagine there'd be no pro forma, really, would there be for a case? Every case is very different.
Yeah, look, a lot of the basics that you do are the same, but then you change it depending on the type of job that you've got, and then you then adapt to that, and then hopefully get enough evidence to connect your crook with the job.
What defines a murder investigation? What actually do you have to prove?
Well, you've got to establish, first of all, that we are dealing with initially we attend them as a suspicious death, and then we then establish, yeah, we do have a homicide. It's then obviously identifying a suspect, getting as much evidence as you can, and again, getting back to connecting your suspect with the job. Often you'll have information in relation to a particular job, and then a suspect that you can connect with the job, but if you don't have the evidence, in the end you can't charge them until you've got enough evidence to arrest them and then charge them with the offence.
We've already spoken about a couple of cases that really affected you, like the murder of that 11-year-old girl Amber in Kyneton. Why do some of these murder cases stay with you?
Oh, I think it's just because the nature of them, they all have an effect on you, and some more than others, and some stick in your mind more so than others. And and it's just a part of life. But I guess it's because you get to see what people do, and the careless disregard for human life, as I've mentioned to you before, that some of these crooks have for their victims, and then the jobs just stay with you because of the nature of what's occurred, and really you're dealing with people for no reason have been murdered.
Why has this particular murder in Hawthorne East stayed with you?
Well, it was probably because of the circumstances, and really just as to more so with apart from the victim aspect of it, but what the offender was doing after and what he did after the murder, and then of course when we actually arrested him the following afternoon after he'd committed the murder.
I suppose initially, of course, jobs do come across your desk being in the Homicide Squad. How did this one come across your desk, and why did you go to the house in the first place?
Well, what had happened, we were in the office, and we'd actually started, it was a Wednesday on the 25th of November in 87, and we actually had started work at 7 o'clock that morning, and we were still there when the job came in a bit after 10 o'clock that night. The on-call crew had actually got another job when this second job came in, and I discussed it with my crew, and we decided, well, we're not going to call someone else in, we'll just keep... We'll keep working, and so we did. So we eventually went to the job. What was initially reported was that the offender, and at that stage we didn't know who it was, but there was a person continually ringing the Camberwell Police Station talking about this particular job. And I think perhaps he felt a bit guilty because of what had happened, but he wanted the police to go round there. And then...
So the offender actually initially called Camberwell Police Station talking about this case?
Yeah, he was trying to get the police to go round to the scene. At that stage, we didn't know who he was. He was certainly not identifying himself, but he made a number of phone calls and he just wanted the police to go round to this address in East Hawthorne in Urban Parade. And then he's gone. The police have eventually gone there and, of course, discovered the victim and in the front room of the house.
When we've talked about this job before, you said that it was initially a home invasion, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. He'd actually, this guy was a, the offender was a painter by occupation, and he'd actually painted the victim's house 12 months before, and he was just infatuated with her, and she wanted nothing to do with him. I certainly believe that... although he wouldn't, he never mentioned it, but he was probably had even been stalking her for a period of time, just looking at her coming and going from the address. And because he'd been there that 12 months before, and how we actually had identified him, apart from him making the calls, but we found a fingerprint. Our forensic people found a fingerprint at the address, but it wasn't anywhere we could certainly eliminate where it was found from him actually being in there this particular night, but it was a fingerprint that he'd left when he'd painted the house 12 months earlier.
So let's just go back to he. So 12 months ago, he'd actually did a job as a painter with this woman, and that was in East Hawthorne. Tell us the name of the offender and what you sort of knew about him.
Well, his name's Michael John Locken. He came from the Sunshine area. How he initially got the job, I think our victim just wanted some painting done, and he just obviously come and gave a quote for the job, and he got the job. And but he was just when he was talking about her, he was just infatuated with her. But then when he's gone there that night, she again rejected his advances, and as a result of it, finished up, he murdered her.
So what do you know about the victim?
The victim was a nurse by occupation. She'd previously been, had studied and was involved with ballet, and I think she'd put up a bit of a struggle, but he was eventually able to overpower her and bound and gagged her and of course, had stabbed her a number of times, causing some significant injuries.
So he's gone back, and he's obviously enamoured with her, and he's gone back to the premises. And do you know what ensued then?
Well, he was trying to play down what he actually did, because he was infatuated with her. And but all it was is that I think he's gone in there, made his advances towards her, she's rejected, and didn't want anything to do with him. And of course, he's then taken it out on her, where he's attacked her and stabbed her.
How often are murders committed like this, when you've got a domestic situation which sort of spirals out of control?
Well, they happen on a there are a number of jobs, certainly in my time at the homicide, through domestic violence, and there's been a lot since, which there's been a lot of publicity about. And one of the previous jobs I'd spoken to you about, with Amber Stahl, that was as a result of the offender being infatuated with her mother, and she wanted nothing to do with him, and then they then take it out on whoever. In Amber's case, he took it out on her. In this case with Locke, he took it out on the victim.
How crucial, Wally, were the first 24 hours investigation in this matter?
Yeah, it was pretty important, because once he'd had some prior convictions, and once we had identified who he was. It was a matter of finding him as soon as we could. In this case, he was continually, still even the following day, ringing the Camberwell police about trying to play down his role. It somehow got into the media that there was a similarities between what he'd done and, of course, the Anita Cobby murder in Sydney. And the offender tried to play down that this is not like that. It's nothing like the Anita Cobby job. And he was trying to play down his actual involvement. And what happened after that was that he eventually, later that day, had contacted A Current Affair. And what he wanted to do was meet up and be interviewed on national television, having committed this murder, but trying to play down his role in the incident.
So he's not high on the IQ scale either. I mean, it's interesting that the media got involved. And so the media initially described this murder as being similar to Anita Cobby. How destructive was that in the investigation?
Well, it just set our crook off, and I was initially a little bit concerned that it might have he might have reacted to that, and someone else might have suffered. But fortunately, from our perspective, all he wanted to do was play down his role. And to be honest, I couldn't believe that The Current Affair was prepared to meet him, but they did. They set up a meeting, and as a result of that, we arrested him on the. I was on the footbridge that you lead across to the MCG from Wellington Parade there in East Melbourne.
Current Affair, he obviously contacted them, and they would have leapt at the opportunity to speak to someone who was claiming that he was innocent. Did they then contact you, or how did you get to understand that A Current Affair had been contacted by this person?
Well, no, they contacted us. They contacted the homicide office, and then as a result of that... there was a member that was teed up to just as it like as an undercover operative just to walk across the bridge, but and at the appropriate time was going to grab him, which occurred, and then we were just in that vicinity, and we drove past just as that was occurring because we knew it was around that time that it was going to happen, and then we saw the crook there, saw the undercover member. Grabbing him and fighting with him, and we've just jumped straight out of the car and up and got him and apprehended him. From the time that we've grabbed him and taking him down to our police vehicle, he was trying to get his hands in his top pocket, and once we were able to contain him, I actually did a quick search, and up in his top pocket I found on the left-hand side of the jacket he had, an inside pocket, I found the murder weapon. And he admitted at that time that that's the knife that he'd used in the killing of their female victim.
That's extraordinary. So he'd actually carried the murder weapon with him.
Yeah, look, I'm quite sure he didn't expect to be arrested at the time that he was, but he had that with him, I guess, to if someone did try and grab him, that he would pull the knife. I would assume, and then although you never assume anything, but certainly that he would have produced the weapon to try and get away from us, but we were able to subdue him and get the knife in our possession, and then we took him back and then processed him.
Gone are the days when the media would get so involved. I mean, this happened in 1987 or 88? 87. So the media would have loved that. A Current Affair would have loved being able to get that... that seizure and that nab of that crook on camera. Did you feel that the media actually assisted you in resolving this case?
Oh, look, no, the media were good. They were right from the outset when he made the contact to A Current Affair. They kept in constant contact with us, and we were obviously concerned for their welfare as much as anything, and but we knew that would be a member there to, and we were in the vicinity anyway, ready to pounce at the appropriate time, which we did, and arrested him and took him back. But no, the media were really good, but for them it was during the course of an interview, live television, and it was being on television that night, and it was actually live television where we've grabbed him.
And what was his response when you guys grabbed him?
Oh, he was pretty shocked, and he was just trying to get away. He was just fighting and just trying to get away. And but there was three of us that had grabbed him, and he wasn't all that big a guy, and he certainly he wasn't getting away from us, and we weren't going to let him go. And then our main concern was just securing him and searching him. And of course, then that's when I found the knife.
How long did you interview him for, and did he explain his motivation for killing her?
Oh, look, we interviewed him when we once we arrested him. We took him back to our office at St Kilda Road at the time, to the homicide office, and he we then did all the preliminaries ready to interview him, and then commenced to interview him, and then the actual injuries were being detailed to him as the injuries that he inflicted on the victim. We were just going through the detail of the injuries to him, and next minute there was a thump and he'd actually collapsed, because I think he just didn't, he himself just didn't realise the extent of the injuries that he'd caused, because he'd stabbed her some, I think it was 15, 20 odd times, and he just didn't realise he'd inflicted that amount of injury to the victim, and that's what caused him to collapse. So we simply suspended the interview for a period of time and then got him checked out, and then he was in a fit state. We had him checked off by medically checked off so that we could continue with the interview, which we eventually did. And then he was just infatuated with her, and all he kept talking about was that he just wanted to have a relationship with her, and she just wasn't interested in him. And he's obviously, from the time that he'd painted a house 12 months before, I think he just had this infatuation with her all this time, and he seemed to think in his mind that if he approached her and spoke to her, that she would want to be with him. But and then he couldn't stand the rejection, and then as a result committed the murder.
It's extraordinary. So he's sort of almost fainted in the middle of the interview, realising the damage that he'd done to this person that he absolutely loved and was infatuated with.
Yeah, he was just, I think it was just the,
almost
I could,
the shock.
Well, I could see when Moff Sider was, corroborator was just going through the process of the extent of the injuries, I was looking at the crook, just to get to see what his reaction was when the injuries or the extent of these injuries were being detailed to him. And he sort of started to waver a little bit, but I didn't expect him
physically.
Just to... Yeah, he was just... I could just see it was starting to have an effect on him, and then just out of the blue, his head's just dropped and he's hit the table and then just keeled over on the floor, and then... he was just laying on the floor. We got the ambos in and just got him checked over to make sure that he was okay. And then after a period of time, we were able to re-interview him.
So you managed to interview him, and do you remember what he was charged with? Do you remember, did he receive a significant sentence?
Look, he got charged with the murder and remanded in custody, obviously. And then he got a number of years, and of course the, back then, what would happen is they'd get, say, a person got a 20-year sentence, and then the courts would impose a minimum penalty, which is what happened in his case. He'd be out now anyway. He would have he did his time and then got out after he'd done his time.
How do you reflect on this case now, Wally?
Oh, look, it's just you. Just I think back on it now, and you look at the fact with all the you know, a lot of the homicides that I was involved in the investigation of, where you just think it's a life wasted. Someone didn't go on to have relationships, didn't go on to have children, and I think of Amber Stahl. She was aged 11, and that job occurred in 1988, and I just think as an 11-year-old in 1988, just all those years ago now, how old she would have been now, probably married with kids, but wasn't to be. So it is sad, and but it's life. Unfortunately, it's just things like that happen, and there are people out there that, that do have a careless disregard and for other people's life's well-being, and they do what they do, and that's why it's important that when a job like this does occur, no matter what the offence is, but that we do catch the offenders involved, and they're dealt with appropriately. But often the sentencing is not, in my view, what it should be. When you look at with Amber's murder, he got 17 years with a 13-year minimum, and you just think she got life,
and he didn't,
and he should have, but because of the minimum sentence, once they've done that, if they're of good behaviour, they get out, and that's what happens.
Well, you managed to secure this conviction, and job well done. And look, thank you very much again for returning to the Crime Couch, Wally.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure. And it's great just to let people just to, that perhaps aren't familiar with a lot of the work that we do, just to see as to what happens, what does happen, and what's involved. And the job done by the guys still in the job now, and still certainly at the homicide squad with what they do. They do a fantastic job, and they've got great leadership there, and then hopefully we can get as many of the jobs solved as we can.
Thanks, Wally.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining. I'm Rochelle Jackson, and I look forward to your company next time on The Crime Couch.